I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University. An American conversation with global attitude is what we do. This one is about new music with four young and almost young composers at the Summer Festival of Contemporary Music at Tanglewood in the Berkshire Hills of Massachusetts. My interest was partly in the music, but equally in hearing what young artists know about this age that we're all going through. For young composers, the breakthrough age of Obama is more particularly the global age of YouTube and easy electronic file sharing. It's the age of access to sounds new and old, acoustic and digital, far and wide. It's an age past any aesthetic orthodoxy, when every combination of sounds is possible, and there's nobody to decree what is good. This is a piece that everybody at Tanglewood liked a lot. It's one of Aaron Travers's Songs of Loss, inspired by a Stephen Crane poem. At 33, Aaron Travers has the look more of a pro second baseman than a composer. He grew up in Florida, wanting to write music for movies, and then music to match his taste in classical poetry.
When I'm writing a piece, I don't think really about... I don't think about how it fits into the world. I mean, I think it's kind of probably normal for most artists and most composers. I'm not trying to make a big statement. I'm trying to make a very deeply personal statement. I think another thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is just something that I've been thinking about for a while, is one of the reasons I compose is, or the reason I compose the music that I do, is that I think it's important to keep creating art that puts us in a poetic mindset as opposed to a prosaic one. I think, I remember Robert Graves, a very interesting personality, who was saying that we've lost our ability to think poetically. I think music has that ability to bring us into that mindset. And I think by doing that, we can kind of, if we are able to bring back the sort of poetic way of thinking, we can engage with our world in a more meaningful way. One of the things that we're seeing is a trend that's been going on for maybe the last 40 or 50 years even, which is the splintering of different, of diverse musical styles. I think it's splintering even further, and I think if we're sometimes losing a sense of an overall musical aesthetic like one might find in, say, the Romantic period or the Classical period or something, I think it's that splintering that's going on and the increasing globalization that we're seeing and the ability for us to grab information from anywhere.
Splintering or maybe coming together.
Well, and I guess in the way that kind of happens overall, once you splinter more and more, the more chaos you get. Chaos is sort of the example of an ultimate order in a way. So yes, I guess we're in a period of a sort of weird Brownian motion in which everything is almost at a standstill. There's so much going on and on the small scale. If we pinpoint a certain, you know, a tiny portion of what's going on in this part of the world musically, if we stand back, everything is just everything is swarming all at once. But there is no large scale trajectory in all this. So where do I fit into it? I'm still discovering where I fit into that. If I do react to my environment in my music, it's probably on a subconscious level.
Could I ask you, Aaron, The music of yours I heard this morning, there were settings of poems, were marked by a tremendously high polish, formal beauty, reflective depth, but also beauty. And I was kind of shocked.
Were you shocked because we don't really hear much beauty like that, or...
Yeah, in a certain sense, beauty is the last thing we expect from contemporary music. That's the wrong way to put it. It was a kind of formal order. You wanted to pick it up and take it home. That kind of beauty.
Well, that's terrific, because creating for me means I need to have some sort of structure that underlies the piece, and that structure has to have a connection to the smaller scale musical material, the notes, the pitches, the motives. All of these things come together and interrelate in very specific ways. And all of these things also relate specifically to the text that I set. To create the music, I had to go directly to the text itself and its forms and what and how its words connected to one another. And I tried to reflect that in the piece.
Here is a taste of Jacob Banks's orchestral piece titled Rapid Transit, which had its world premiere at Tanglewood this month. Jake Banks is a child of rural Minnesota. He's 26 now, going urban in a hurry in Chicago.
Jacob, where does your music come from?
Where does it come from? It comes from the world around me. There are kind of two really big things that I see happening, which is make it very exciting to be a composer right now. One of them is, and I've just noticed this all over the place, you'll notice it in this festival, and you'll notice it on new music radio and everywhere. In the world of music today, there is no real orthodoxy, which I find very encouraging and exciting, because there's not, because there isn't so much, you know, we all sort of have to sort of fit in the predominating style of the day. And I think this might be close to what Aaron was getting at when it comes to the splintering. The fact is, because we're more used to engaging music on its own terms, I think we end up getting better music. Because I think when there's sort of a prevailing style going on, people sort of write in that vein, and then we get a lot of music that is very much the same, and some of it which is quite outstanding. But because now as a composer, I'm sort of able to set up my own terms when I begin composing a piece of music, because there's no orthodoxy, I'm not turning to what's happening today. I find that it's much more exciting to be a composer than I imagine it had been at other points in history. The other thing that I find exciting, besides the fact that there's no sort of party line that I feel that I have to follow in order to have a career, the other thing is people make a big deal about, you know, multiculturalism now. You know, they're sort of more aware now than ever, sort of the various backgrounds that people come from, the incredible diversity. But no sooner have we become more aware of it than globalization has sort of taken over it, such that I feel like now more than any other time in the history of the world, you have a common vocabulary to rely on, if that makes sense, for good or for ill. So if I'm to go to Japan, you know, I sort of know what I would order at McDonald's in Japan, because there are McDonald's in Japan. So there, I find it sort of exciting in terms of reaching a global audience. It's never been easier sort of to reach a global audience, and I don't think we've ever, as more aware we are now than ever of the differences across cultures, I think we have so much more now in common than we used to. So those two sort of trends make it very exciting, and that's sort of the mindset that I bring to each piece. I had a commission to write a piece. It was a piano concerto for the South Dakota Symphony. And what is very exciting about what's going on there is they have a conductor. He's been there, I think, probably 3 or 4 years, Delta David Geyer. He's a very good conductor. Used to be an assistant at the New York Philharmonic, and now he's music director there. And he's made it one of his guiding missions to program new music on every program, and not just to sort of plop a token new piece down or just resort back to the old canon, but really bring in brand new works that haven't been heard, some of them very difficult for the players and very difficult for the listeners, but to present it to the audience in such a way that that it can stand as it should next to Beethoven and Brahms. And what I found when I went there was that, you know, because the audience had been prepared, I had much more freedom than I had originally imagined I would, because they now have a steady diet of new music, and it's revitalizing the organization. I talked to Maestro Geyer, and he says it actually draws people in who might not otherwise, you know, be interested in Beethoven or Brahms. So very exciting opportunities and things going on in unlikely places like Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
And what did you feel you were giving them?
A piano concerto. But what do you mean? Do you mean like, what did I feel like?
Okay, you want new music? Here's a dose of me.
Yeah, I don't think that way, and I would imagine that I'm not. I don't think sort of like, you know, I'll as a chef, I'll cook the same for everyone, if that makes sense. To answer the question better, I didn't feel the need to, because the fact that it's a small city in the middle of the United States, thanks to the fact that, you know, they have the same access via iTunes to all the music that anyone in Chicago, New York has, I didn't feel the need to give them and to treat them any differently than any other audience. So I felt like I was just giving them the genuine article that I would have written for anyone else.
Yeah. Did they get it?
I don't think they got it any less than any other audience would have. Let's put it that way. They were very generous, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Cynthia Lee Wong is also 26. She's a Juilliard pianist who writes what one German review called shamelessly beautiful music, beyond any rules of the old avant-garde. This is from a set of three portraits.
Cynthia Wong, what does your music reflect of the world we all live in at this moment, early in a new century?
I don't think my music tries to make any statements about this time or the society in particular. What I try to reach out is something that's more basic in terms of a human nature that you find spreads across all times. For example, we all have fears, we all experience death of a loved one. We all have basic common life experiences. And that's the aspect that I reach out toward and connect to when I compose. I do believe in something that's beyond just this immediate life that I try to tap into as well. And I think that's more powerful than to just think of living in this time or this society, because that can get very dangerous. For example, you know, because of my name being Asian, there tends to be people who wanted to market me as a Chinese composer. When I was born here, and my parents were born here, and my grandparents were born here, so we're very Americanized. However, sometimes what happens is that the distinguishing characteristic, for example, being Asian, becomes more of a labeling or identifying characteristic than simply being human. So I like to reach into something that's more common among individuals than something that's more, I guess, externally identifiable.
When you speak of a life outside this life, what do you refer to?
Well, it's hard to explain like what this, but it's definitely a place that's more interior, that's more spiritual in a way. So, I mean, when I was a kid, I think I was always in this other world. So it's very hard for me sometimes to just ground myself and know what it's like to be here and present. It's more natural sometimes for me just to daydream or to improvise for hours by myself. And that's the kind of world that I connect into that's not really here sometimes.
You know, I had a funny conversation years ago with Milton Babbitt, the composer you all know, in which he told me that he had gone to high school in Jackson, Mississippi, with Eudora Welty, a great American writer. Stories especially, but novels. And it sort of blew my mind that they could have intersected in one place and come from one moment in this continent, in our history. Years later, John Williams, Mr. Star Wars, Jaws, E.T. and all that, told me that he had gone to high school with Susan Sontag. And again, I thought, wow, that those two should be have passed through the same Latin class. I asked Susan Sontag years later if she remembered John Williams in high school. She said, who's John Williams? But I sort of wonder who you went to high school with, but more particularly sort of who is voicing your experience, your history in another medium?
This isn't someone who I went to high school with. It's just somebody that I know. I'm lucky enough to live in Chicago. So there's a photographer. Her name is Rebecca Foley, and she's an incredibly gifted photographer. And I feel like many of the things that she's doing reflect what I'm interested in doing in music. She never uses a camera, so all of her work is exposing film to various things. We have a photo in our living room, which is basically hydrangea leaves. Exposed to film and blown up, and it's really amazing. So she's one sort of my age that I think of is very, very gifted, and look forward to seeing what she continues to do.
And what does it mean that she doesn't use a camera?
She only exposes things to film, so she doesn't take pictures. She's a photographer, but without a camera, such that she only has photographic paper or photographic materials, and she exposes things to them. So she's done an incredible firefly exhibit where she's just exposed photographic paper to fireflies, and it's really just an amazing, amazing art that she is onto, and something I find it resonates a lot with me.
But how does it connect, Jacob, with your own work and the way you make music?
I don't think it connects in any specific way. I think, it sort of gets at the idea that it isn't so much that we're speaking about ideas that can so easily be put into words. Such that it's just sort of this approach, this very... She has a very sort of tender way about approaching things, but not in any kind of romantic or old-fashioned way. It's just her process, her affect, I find very inspiring.
Hmm. Aaron, can you think of you in another mode, in another art, in another expressive life?
All the people that I commiserate with are all musicians. And honestly, the people that I met who were not musicians, they all commiserate with writers or painters or photographers. They didn't mix with each other very much in the world. I think back to the people that I knew in high school. They're all my friends on Facebook now. Some people I haven't spoken to in years, and all of a sudden they're calling me. They're all parents and churchgoers and they have office jobs and things like that. There's nothing, exceedingly spectacular about them any more than there's anything exceedingly spectacular about me. We share a lot of the same basic concerns. I remember, for instance, connecting with one particular high school friend who is now a mother, and she is sort of learning to raise her kids in a very different way that our parents did, feeding them very good, wholesome, organic foods, going back to cloth diapers instead of Pampers, avoiding, using canola oil instead of talc, or something like that. This is a sort of new way of raising children. I have a son now, 13-month-old son, and so I'm kind of very much immersed in that. And so the people that I... if I have any connections with people from high school, it's through parenthood.
Cynthia Wong, who else out there do you feel in some vague correspondence with?
I would say there are definitely people of the past who I identify with. Particularly, I like to read the poems of Rilke. I love to read in general, so any sort of classics, any sort of poetry. And also, in terms of music, I love Stravinsky. When I was young, I would, I'm still young. When I was in high school, I would listen obsessively to Rite of Spring, all the fast movements, and wake up to the music, set my alarm with the fast movements. And of course, my mom was like, what are you listening to? But definitely, I love Stravinsky because of his boldness and the fact that he would explore different styles, and you still hear his own voice. And I think that takes a certain conviction and a certain strength and a certain amount of courage just to do that. So, and I love Rilke because of his awareness of his interior self.
Hmm. Jacob?
Flannery O'Connor. Gregorian Chant. John Dowland. Benjamin Britten. Oliver Nelson. That's it.
Hmm.
For now.
Aaron?
I think someone non-musical that was still alive that I... whose poetry I admire is Eugenio de Andrade, Portuguese poet. And one of the things that I admire about it is how absolutely crystalline his choice of words are. His poems are usually very short, and they're almost imagistic, but they go beyond something, any sort of surface meaning. There's something much more connected to the human experience that he's trying to get at. Through not only the meaning of the words, but the sound of the words as well. There's a sensual, tactile sense to those words, and it's something that I greatly admire in his poetry, and it's something that I strive for in my own music. The kind of clarity in choosing your notes carefully, and giving sound its own kind of texture and tactility. You know?
Augusta Reed Thomas, a young composer only yesterday, had a 10-year residence with the Chicago Symphony. She screened hundreds of CDs and scores in the course of pulling this festival menu together.
As I'm sitting here speaking with, listening to all what everybody's saying, I actually feel sort of like a proud mother because I admire so much these young composers. And essentially what I did is I listened to many, many, many works across about 8 months of time in order to select works that I wanted to program on this festival at Tanglewood. And I specifically wanted to find some composers in their 20s. And what happened is when I put their works into the CD player, literally hundreds and hundreds of works I listened to, they really spoke to me. I think the one thing I'd like to say is how different they all are. I mean, Paula's piece is completely different from Aaron's, completely different from Jacob's and from Cynthia's and the others, Judd and Helen. And so I like the diversity. I like the variety, the way in which they're each making their own way in the world. I like the honesty of their pieces. I can feel each human being in their piece. I trust it.
How do they connect to your ear with this larger world, the world of the species in a peculiar kind of venture, but a peculiar kind of trouble too, this age we're in?
What I feel when I'm listening to these pieces is almost as if I get snapshots into people's souls. I realize that sounds silly, but you can sort of snap into, okay, what is the world of David Lang, or what is the world of Beat Feuer, or what is the world of Yvonne Fedele, or of Jake Banks? And that's really beautiful, to be able to sit through and go into these people's worlds. And yet we're all from the same world, and lots of countries represented, and yet there's a basic humanity to all the pieces, I feel.
But are they in the same world? Are they all living in what I call the age of Obama?
Well, we have many countries represented and people of very different generations from 26 up to 100. So I think people, for instance, someone from Denmark may not be as involved as someone from Chicago or with a Mr. Obama or someone from New York. But all of these composers have something that relates to one another, that we are brothers and sisters, as it were. And one of the things I wanted to do on this festival is to have everybody be alive and to have everyone be invited. Because many concerts we go to are, if I might, without being rude, are dead people. And so this is a very living festival. So I guess if you go for quality, then it becomes kind of universal. No matter what the syntax is or what the language is, you could have someone from all over the world. But if it's a quality piece, people recognize it.
Augusta, I wonder, is it me or is it the generation? The music is less scary than it used to be 15, 20 years ago. It's performed with great confidence. It's heard, I think, with great clarity. Not to mention that it's performed with unbelievable chops in this younger generation. But has something changed?
I guess I hear such a variety in the world out there. I think that perhaps my ear leans toward refinement and beautiful forms and elegance and a certain grace and honesty in the works. The one thing that amazes me is how these young musicians are able to completely adapt to the style, to the nuances that are required to bring a jazzy piece off, as opposed to a post-Schoenbergian piece, as opposed to a spectral piece, as opposed to a minimalistic piece. And they're all just given their assignments, and yet I feel that the pieces are being characterized in the way that the composers intended them. I guess, with all due respect, I'm not entirely sure what you mean by scary. Well, let me ask you this. What piece in the history of music is scary?
Shostakovich, to give you a quick answer. I mean, that came out of an unbelievably scary time and a scared man. And it's a reminder of the torments of the mid-century. I guess I'm wondering, apropos Shostakovich, when the new music today is heard in 50 years, we'll remember it as the music of a time. But how will that be? How will 2009 feel in 2059?
One of the things that's coming to my mind, Chris, as you ask that, is let me put it this way. I actually love every piece on this festival. I actually genuinely love it. And they're so broad, you would think, how could she possibly love all these works?
That's not my question, though. We heard the Shostakovich Cello Concerto of 1959 today, played by Yo-Yo Ma, 50 years ago. It's the music of a tormented time, post-Stalin, but the beginning of a new era. When we listen to today's new music in 50 years, we'll say, 2009, yeah, that Obama guy, and they were worried about the planet. They were digging into the genome. Capitalism seemed maybe to be tottering. It'll sound like the music of a time.
That's a really interesting question. I understand your question. Now, when we think of 1911, we think of something. Or when we think of 1870, we think of something. Or what do we think of when we think of 1560? I think it's a really wonderful question, and I don't think I could answer it, because it's sometimes these things take a hindsight. I do feel that I have a great grasp of what's being written today. I'm a complete repertoire junkie, and I listen to everything all the time. My favorite thing is when a CD comes in the mail, I rip it open, and I actually listen to it. And all of my best friends are composers and musicians, and we all send each other CDs. And, you know, it's very much that people are communicating, and I feel like I do have a good sense of what's being written in Russia and in Japan and in Korea and in Australia and in America. Like, I follow it. So I'm not ducking your question. I really am not. But I don't think I could give you a nice pat answer. It's too rich. It's too varied, and that's what I find inspiring, the variety and the humanity across the time. And, you know, even if we were to say, okay, what was 1911 like? So we're thinking of Bartok, and we're thinking of Schoenberg, and we're thinking of Mahler just died. Mahler just died, of course. And, you know, these things are flashing through my head. I'm thinking of jazz and whatnot. You can't capture it. And the Shostakovich we heard today, the cello concerto, exquisitely played by the BSO with Yo-Yo Ma, when I hear it, what I'm listening for is the same thing that I'm listening for when I'm listening to the work of Robin DeRoff or Paula Matheson or others, is a quality of thought, a quality of idea. Whether it's a tortured moment in history or somebody's sort of screaming through their music or if someone's praying through their music or if someone's crying through their music or if someone's seducing through their music, whatever they're doing, I can go into the zone of their verb, whatever they're doing, but I also want to hear the quality of idea, the quality of syntax, the colors, and the beauty of rhythmic syntax and things like this that form the whole piece. So when I listen to Shostakovich, I'm listening for the composition, the beauty of this art form. And it's interesting with composers and composition, because the only way to really evaluate a piece is to listen to it. And sometimes they take 45 minutes. And then you need to listen to them 25 times. So just to get to know a single piece can take months of listening, and it takes a lot of time. So to be able to contextualize what does this Shostakovich cello concerto mean, it's a deep answer requiring great reflection and a great knowledge of its context and of repertoire.
I love scary music. So the scarier the better, as far as I'm concerned. I could listen to scary music and beautiful music, and I think that's where we're at right now. We can hear it all and not be scared by any of it.
That's a wonderful last word, and I think it's what I've meant to say. Augusta Reed Thomas, Cynthia Wong, Jacob Banks, Aaron Travers, thank you. Thank you for the music. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
Paul McCarthy edited this conversation with featured composers at the Tanglewood Festival of Contemporary Music and with the festival's artistic director, Augusta Reed Thomas. Our Brown University intern, Hannah Olson, helped sort out the sound and the sense of it. Make a note of what you listen for and what you hear in new music at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thanks for listening to us, too, and for joining the conversation. Over.